to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, crime. Later on, we hear the Hollywood Star Theater with Margaret O'Brien from 1949. Right now, it's The Adventures of the Falcon from June 15th, 1952 on NBC. Les Tremaine stars in The Case of the Faded Rose.
Now, we invite you to listen to The Adventures of the Falcon as Mike Waring solves The Case of the Faded Rose.
One thing you learn working as a private detective, competition can be the death of trade. As a case in point, I give you Phil Stacy. Mr. Stacy is the pudgy little character mounting the third floor stairs of the Belmar, a shabby roomy house on New York's west side. He's a private detective, too, but Stacy's got the edge on a boy like me. He carries along his own personal Watson.
Only this one goes under the name of Tony Marino.
Sure this is the right girl, Tony?
Absolutely, Mr. Stacy.
I showed her picture to the janitor. He says it's a master port on it.
When'd she get here?
On the 12th.
Well, that checks. What if I could hit her sister for another 100?
Huh?
Oh, skip it. Where do we go from here?
Well, it's the last room down the hall.
She's in now?
Yeah. I followed her here from the pawn shop.
What pawn shop?
Oh, on 3rd Avenue. She bought a gun.
Why, you idiot. Why didn't you tell me that before?
Oh, what difference does it
make? Ah, you stupid. Never mind. Is this it?
Yeah.
Miss Ford. You sure she's in?
Oh, what do you want me to do, swear on her Bible?
I thought Miss Ford, my name is Phil Stacy. I'm working for your sister. Listen, Nancy. You got your sister crazy with worry. Now, if you'd open this door.
What was that?
That's what you think. Give me your hand.
Look, Stacy, let's
get out. Quit, put your shoulder to it. Come on, now, one, two, cut out.
So I'd like to get right down to business. You told me you found my sister.
Yeah, I did. One of my boys traced her to Chicago. Let me see. Yeah, March 14th, she grabbed the California Limited from Los Angeles. She met this guy at the depot and the two of...
I'm not particularly interested in details. Where's Nancy now?
Well, she got to New York on the 12th.
Where is she now?
Well, that raises a peculiar point.
You've lost track of her?
No, not exactly. As a matter of fact,
Well,
I don't know how to say this, Miss Ford, but this guy your sister ran away with must have given her a bad time. You know how young girls are. Probably promised.
Are you trying to tell me she's dead?
Yeah. Yeah, she committed suicide this afternoon. I'm sorry, but that's how things work out sometimes.
Yes, they do, don't they?
Well, I must say, I admire the way you're taking it.
Would it help Nancy if I got hysterical?
No, I guess not. Look, if there's any way I can help...
Yes, there is. What was the name of the man who was responsible?
Well, I wouldn't exactly say...
I would. Who is he?
His name is Duke Mantell.
Have you any idea where this Mr. Mantell can be found?
Yeah, he's got a room at the Haywood. Why?
Well, I'm going to see to it that if my sister couldn't have him in life, perhaps he can join her in death. Thanks for your assistance, Mr. Stacy. Just mail my bill to the hotel. I'd like to speak to Duke Mantell, please.
You are now.
You don't know me, Mr. Mantell, but I'm a friend of Jane Smith.
Jane Smith? I never heard of her.
I was sure you'd say that. Jane warned me you knew so many girls, her name would probably mean nothing.
What's yours?
Charles Layton.
Well, what can I do for you, honey?
Well, Jane made me promise that when I got to New York, I'd give you a call.
Well, that was nice of her.
I know you'll think I'm shameless, but I do want to meet you. Jane told me... Well, never mind.
Now, go on. What were you going to say?
I'll tell you when I see you. There I go again. You must think I'm awful.
No, I think you're wonderful. I like a girl who speaks right up. You doing anything tonight?
Not a thing. Could we meet at the Central Park Boathouse at 9?
Why there?
It's such a romantic spot.
Okay, the boathouse it is.
Till 9, then.
Hey, wait a minute, Cal. How'll I know you?
Don't worry about that, Mr. Mantell. I'll know you. With all I've heard, I couldn't possibly miss.
Mantell, that's right. I'd like you to have one of my cards. Phil Stacy, licensed private investigator. So
I got a proposition for
Look,
you.
Look, Buster, I got a date. I wouldn't keep it if I was you.
What are you talking about?
Would you happen to have a cigarette handy?
Yeah.
Anybody have a girl named Nancy Ford?
No.
That's funny. Because she committed suicide yesterday over some guy. Yeah, I figured he must have given her a real song and dance about the little rose-covered cottage. And when he wouldn't perform, she blew her brains out.
How do you know so much about it?
Well, you saw my card. I'm a private dick.
Who hired you?
Her sister. She don't like you, Duke.
I'm worried.
Well, you would be if you knew what I do.
Such as?
Uh-huh. Now, I'm not spilling unless I get paid. I want $500.
How do I know it's worth it?
You like living?
Go on.
Well, $500 will guarantee it.
Will you take a check?
Don't be funny.
I only got 120 on me.
Yeah, when will I get the rest?
Tomorrow, if your information is legit.
All right, fork it over. 20, 40, 50, 120. All right. Well, like I said, when Carol Ford left my office, she hinted she was going to take care of you.
She was just talking.
No, not her. This is one little girl who believes in action. I tailed her when she left. She went down to a gin mill on 34th Street, and she saw a fellow named Joe Milo.
Who's that?
Hood. They had a nice long talk.
What makes you think I was the subject?
Well, I got good long ears. Then she went to a phone booth, and who do you think she called?
Me.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. All right, Stacy, let's have that dough.
What dough?
That 120 I just gave you.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
I can't afford to.
Hey, cut that
out. Little chiseler, who do you think you're dealing with?
Why should I?
Well, with your experience, you'd know exactly what to do.
I don't like it.
if you're scared, why?
Scared?
Well, in one breath, you tell me the only thing to do is grab the dame. Then when I offer you the job, you turn it down.
Look, Matt, tell, I don't know what you're up to, but I
told you I'm being blackmailed and I want you to handle it.
Well, it's against my better judgment.
I knew I could count on you. I'm staying at the Haywood. After you get through in the park, give me a jingle.
Gentlemen around here about your size?
Won't I do?
I'm afraid not.
You wouldn't be hunting for Duke Mantell, would you?
How would you know?
Who should know better?
You mean you're...
That's right.
I don't believe it.
Why not?
You're nothing like I met.
Is anybody?
You're quite the philosopher, aren't you? Suppose I told you I was Nancy's sister.
I wonder if she'd boast about it.
How can you have the nerve to stand there and talk like that?
I wouldn't be so moral. After all, you're a blackmailer.
I'm a what?
Well, didn't you come here?
I came here for only one reason, and that was...
Oh!
Mr. Mantell!
Well, Mom always told me I'd get into trouble pretending to be what I ain't. Here I pretended to be Duke Mantell and received a slug for my pain. But the next thing I knew was some 2 hours later when I heard bells ringing in the distance. I knew I couldn't be in heaven because that was no angel bending over me. How do you feel, pal? Sergeant Corbett?
Yeah.
Where am I? What happened?
Which do you want me to answer first?
Wait a minute. It's all coming
Oh! Hey, you better watch it, fella. One of these days, the government's going to claim you for a defense project. Well, you got enough lead in you to build a B-29.
Where is she?
Where's who?
The brunette I was talking to.
Well, there was nobody around when we found you. What's her name?
I don't know. I didn't get it.
What was it, a pickup?
No, I had an appointment to meet her.
She the one who plugged you?
No, the shot came from the other side of the boathouse.
You think it might have been her husband?
I tell you, it was nothing like that. She thought I was a boy named Duke Mantell.
Well, if your purpose was to confuse me, Mr. Waring, you succeeded.
This Mantell claimed someone was shaking him down. I was to pose as him and meet the blackmailer. When I showed, there was this gal.
Well, what were you expecting?
Nothing like what I got.
You have no idea who she is.
Not at all. But I'm going to find out.
Hey, wait a minute. You can't leave like that. You're forgetting something.
I can't see what.
Your pants. You better wear them tonight, baby. It's awful cold outside.
In learning, I kept that date for you last night. It was a nice piece of work.
What are you talking about?
Setting me up for a clay pigeon.
Setting you up?
Yeah, someone who thought I was you took a shot at me.
Can't believe it.
Would you like me to bleed a little to prove it?
Well, there must be some mistake.
Yeah, and it was all mine. I should have spotted that blackmail story of yours for a phony. You knew someone was gunning for you. Now, who was it?
What difference does it make?
What difference does it make? Maybe you don't think much of breathing, but I kind of like it, and I resent anyone trying to break me of the habit. Now, who's the girl?
None of your business.
And we'll see about that. Get your coat.
Don't talk like a
child. What?
I wouldn't try that again. You didn't have that arm in a sling.
Don't let that stop you, Duke.
It won't. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I see. And what do you intend to do with that gun?
Well, I'm a funny kind of a guy, Waring. While I might have objections to slugging a cripple, I got none to plugging one. Now, get.
Duke Mantell?
Yeah. why I asked. Is it worth a couple of bills?
Yeah.
Well, where's the bill?
You'll have to trust me.
I got hung up once that way. I want cash on the line.
Okay.
Now, what's her name? Carol Ford. You'll find her at the Belmar. I don't know for how long, though. So if I were you, Pally, I'd get on my horse.
Maybe that's because it was dark out the last time we met.
You're Duke Mantell.
No, my name is Mike Waring.
But you
it's
said...
a long story, Angel, and I just as soon sit while I tell it. I was working for Mantell. He claimed he was being blackmailed, and he asked me to pose for him at the payoff.
He was lying.
So I've discovered. You arranged to meet Mantell so someone could plug it.
That's a lie.
I got the story from Phil Stacy. Now, who's the boy you hired?
All right, Mr. Waring, I'll tell you the truth.
It's about time someone did.
I did arrange to have Mantell killed, but later I thought it over and tried to call off my man.
What happened?
I couldn't reach him. That's why I showed up at the park early to warn you.
I don't believe it.
Don't be a fool. If I'd wanted you killed, I wouldn't have been there at all.
Nevertheless, your boy took a shot at me.
He couldn't have. He was due to meet me at 9. You were shot at 8:30.
It doesn't make sense. If your boy didn't do it, then who did?
What about Mr. Mantell?
What about him?
Suppose Duke was the one who shot you.
What would be the point?
So I'd get the credit. That would dispose of me and leave him free to go on his way.
Yeah. If you got sent up for knocking me off, that might suit him fine.
What do you think?
I think if there's anything to your theory, Mr. Mantell and I ought to have another chat. Only this time, I'll have the gun. So long, Carol. I'll be seeing you.
Somebody in town is awful peeved at you. And I can't write to say as I blame the part either. Why don't you get a copy of How to Win Friends and Influence People?
What's the use? I can't read.
Oh, that's a shame. Because ain't time for you to learn now.
Now, look, Winters, maybe we can work out a deal. I'll give you $1,000 for that gun.
Are you trying to bribe me?
$2,000.
Well, I've never been so insulted in all my life.
$2,500. My last bill.
Honestly, you got it on you?
Yeah. Let me get my coat.
No, just let me.
Now listen, Winters.
What pocket do you keep to walk? Oh, Mr. Mantell. I'm surprised at you. You tried to take advantage of me.
Now look, I can explain that gun.
You told me your wallet was here. Well, it just goes to prove now you can't trust a Yankee.
This isn't like you. What's on your mind?
You went over to see Duke Mantell tonight, didn't you?
Yes.
What happened?
Nothing.
You take a bullet intended for him and try to tell me nothing happened.
I had no choice. He pulled a gun.
Where's yours?
What are you getting at?
Mantell was murdered an hour ago.
You're kidding.
Oh, that must mean you're stuck for an answer.
I don't know anything about it.
Lieutenant Corum thinks you do.
That idiot.
Well, you're promoting him. Last week he was only a jerk.
Well, if he thinks I killed Mantell...
That he does.
He's crazy. Why should I?
Well, Duke set you up for a clay pigeon.
I gave up that idea.
For what?
Suppose Mantell was behind the plot all along. Suppose he was the one who took the shot at me.
What would be the point?
To frame Carol Ford.
If I were you, Mike, I'd stick to the original story. If he was the one who plugged you, that gives you an even stronger motive to kill him.
Well, no, I only...
No, don't say another word. I know talk is cheap, but your dialogue can cost you your life. Now, let's go.
In a moment, we'll return. return to the Adventures of the Falcon. Now back to the Adventures of the Falcon.
I guess there's no pleasing some people. But when Sergeant Corbett nominated me for the position of killer of Duke Mantell, my own client, I tried to decline the honor. But Corbett felt sure his superior, Lieutenant Coram, wouldn't hear of it.
Boy, I'd certainly hate to be in your shoes. When Coram gets his hands on you...
Look, Sergeant, you can't be serious about this.
Oh, I wish there was some way I could convince you.
But you know I couldn't kill anybody.
Why, sure. But go try to convince Lieutenant Coram.
Wait a second. What made Coram pick on me?
He got a tip from a girl named Carol Ford. Seems you were up to see her, and when you left, you threatened dire consequences for one Duke Mantell. Naturally, I rushed over to give him protection.
And when you got there, he was dead.
That's right. On relaying this to my superior officer, he immediately jumped to the conclusion that you were responsible.
He's crazy.
I agree. But what can I do?
So, in the final analysis, Carol Ford is the one I have to thank for this.
That's who you got to thank.
You suppose we could drop over and see her before we hit headquarters?
Well, I don't know. It's out of the way.
But don't worry, Sergeant. I'm sure Carol will make it worth your while.
I most certainly do.
I wouldn't be too strenuous in my objections, Angel. This gentleman is with the police.
Does he have a warrant?
I don't need one.
Now, look here.
Yeah. Look.
Hi, Jeff.
Well, if it isn't Phil Stacy, what are you doing here?
None of your business.
Maybe I can guess. He came up here with some advice.
Is there anything wrong with that?
That all depends. Now, purely as a guess, I'd say you were tipping her off to skip town.
How would you know that?
Well, he probably showed you that the murder of Duke Mantell might have the cops around asking embarrassing questions.
Well, looks like I was right.
Yeah. Too bad your timing was off.
I'm sorry, Miss Ford.
You should be. If you were 20 minutes earlier, we would have missed her.
Look, Waring, you got the wrong angle on this. If you think she's responsible for Duke Mantell's murder...
No, I don't.
I assume...
That's because you wanted to.
Look, Mike, you know what you're talking about.
I think so, Sergeant. Just ask yourself this question. What would you have thought if you found Miss Ford gone?
Well, that she was guilty.
Which is just what Stacy wanted you to think.
What are you babbling about?
You killed Mantell.
What are you, nuts?
If I am, it comes from dealing with squirrels like you. All right, Sergeant, take him to his cage. Company. Why did you tip off the police that I headed in for Duke Mantell?
I didn't want to see you make the same mistake I almost made.
I see.
Well, I don't. I can't believe Stacy was responsible for Mantell's murder.
You better. If he didn't do it, then by a process of elimination, it has to be you.
In that case, I'm glad you settled on him. But he had no motive.
It was that pasting Mantell gave him. When you left the office making threats, he tipped off Mantell, expecting to be remunerated. But all he got for his pains was a shellacking. A guy like Stacy takes a thing like that personally.
Then he was responsible for shooting at you at the park.
That he was. He thought I was Mantell. Then when he discovered his mistake, he sent a friend of his named Jack Winters to remedy it. He felt sure he'd never be suspected.
What made you pick on him?
There were three reasons. One, he was on top of every play. When it looked as though I came to a blind alley, he came up with your name. And then that final bit of his telling you to skip town, he just wanted you to incriminate yourself.
You said there were three reasons. You've only given two.
Well, you were the only woman in the case. And if you were guilty, I'd have had to wind up with Sergeant Corbett. Believe me, Angel, it works out much better this way.
The Adventures of the Falcon on Tuned to Yesterday from June 15th, 1952 on NBC. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now Margaret O'Brien appears in the Hollywood Star Theater. She was a star of many dramas on the silver screen and fits perfectly into this crime story role in the play The Promise of Murder. This is from the same year she was appearing in two well-known motion pictures, the Oscar-winning Little Women, where she portrayed Beth, and as leading lady in The Secret Garden, alongside Dean Stockwell and Herbert Marshall. She's joined by David Ellis, Jeff Chandler, and Rita Lynn next.
The Anison Hollywood Star Theater with Margaret O'Brien, introducing Rita Lynn in Promise of Murder.
You walked home from school with Frankie Harris yesterday. I saw you.
Well, gee whiz, Jim, what if I did?
You're my girl, Dinah. And if I catch you with Frankie or any other guy, I'll kill you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Margaret O'Brien speaking to you from Hollywood. We have just had a brief glimpse into tonight's exciting story on the Anison Hollywood Star Theater. I'm very happy to be here again, because this program is such a wonderful help to young actors who are trying to become stars. Many of them have studied acting and worked hard for years, and some of them, with loads of talent, have gone through all sorts of hardships while waiting for a chance to prove their ability. I've been very lucky, but I know there are many young people in Hollywood who never get a chance to show their talents. It's almost like a fairy tale. Stardom is a huge, shiny castle surrounded by a high wall and a moat so that no one can get in. All around the outside are hundreds of young actors trying to get into the castle. Then along comes the Anison Hollywood Star Theater program, like a knight in shining armor, and bridges the moat for those whose talents are deserving of stardom. I hope that being on the program tonight will have a true fairy tale ending, and that Rita Lynn will be a star of tomorrow. You'll get a chance to know Rita better when I talk to her later on the program. But now I want you to meet her in an original radio drama titled Promise of Murder, in which she plays the role of Dinah. Ladies and gentlemen, Rita Lynn. Good luck, Rita.
Thank you, Margaret.
It is possible that the long-forgotten, hastily-mouthed words of youth can determine the course of one's life or death. The girl named Dinah sits alone in her small apartment, her hand gripping the telephone, her eyes fixed straight ahead, looking at nothing.
I should have known my husband would try to kill me someday. He told me he would, but I never really believed him. It took just a few seconds ago when he called me and said...
Hello, Dinah.
Hello, Jim. Why are you calling me? I thought we weren't going to talk for a while. But we agreed to stay apart until we could think things out.
I have thought them out from the start to the finish. I've got the answer, Dinah.
You have?
Yeah, you've probably forgotten, but a long time ago I told you I'd kill you.
Jim!
That's the answer. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to kill you.
I've heard that the drowning man, just before he dies, in that one second, he remembers his whole life. Just as I'm sitting here remembering my whole life with Jim. P.S. 31, now, public school. That's where I met him. Such a long time ago. No one introduced us. No one had to. Our eyes met. Clear across Miss Mason's chemistry class. And from that moment on, I was Jim's girl. He was always jealous, but when we were kids, I was kind of proud of him. Until this very moment, I'd forgotten about that day on the way home from school when he said...
You're my girl, Dinah. If I catch you with Frankie or any other guy, I'll kill you.
Oh, don't say a thing like that, Jim.
I mean it.
Oh, you don't. You're just putting on a big show because you're jealous. And of Frank Harris, of all people. Golly sakes, I've known Frank since I was born, nearly. I went to kindergarten with him. He's a very dear old friend.
I don't want to hear about him.
Well, you don't have to holler at me. Matter of fact, you don't have to walk with me either. Goodbye.
Dinah, wait a minute. Please, Dinah.
Let go of me.
Don't run away. I gotta tell you something.
Oh, quit it, Jim. Everybody's looking at us.
Will you listen to me?
All right. What do you want to say?
Dinah, I'm sorry. Honest to gosh, I am.
Oh, you're always getting mad and being sorry and then getting mad all over again.
I tell you I am sorry. I won't do it again. I swear I won't. Just because of the way I feel about you, I'm always afraid you'll like somebody else. I see guys looking at you all the time.
Seems like you'd be proud to have them looking at your girl.
Yeah. You are my girl, aren't you?
Well, yeah.
Are we, going steady?
Well, I told all the kids we were.
Well, I guess that cinches it, huh?
I guess.
Hey, I'd sure like to kiss you.
Well, then why don't you, Jim? Why don't you kiss me?
He did kiss me. Right there in the middle of the sidewalk with everybody watching. And somebody told the school principal about it. And I remember how she called us in her office and gave us the devil. But we didn't care. We were kids in love. Nothing could touch us. And it seemed like no time until we were both wearing senior sweaters, dancing together at the prom. And then I was pinning Jim's flowers on my graduation dress. It was white organdy, with a taffeta petticoat. And it made a soft, rustly sound when I danced with Jim. I remember there was a little balcony just off the dance floor, and I went out. Frank Harris was standing there, leaning against the rail. When he saw me, he straightened up and looked at me kind of funny.
Sorry to stare at you, Dinah, but I guess you're just about the prettiest thing I ever saw.
Thanks, Frank. Who's your date?
Huh?
I say, who'd you bring to the dance?
No one. I'm alone.
Well, that's just crazy. Didn't you want to bring a girl?
Yeah, I did. The girl I wanted to bring had a date. A steady one.
Oh, I always was good at seeing you wrong. Oh, I'm out here, Jim.
Yeah, I see you. I might have known if Harris was around, you'd be in the general area.
Jim.
Get your coat. We're leaving. Come on.
Oh, don't, Jim. You're hurting me.
Let go of her.
I'll break her neck.
I said let go
of
her.
You dirty...
Go on inside.
Don't
go on.
Stop it, both of you. Please.
I've been aching to do this for years.
Jim, listen.
Dirty.
Stop it. Somehow, some of the fellows managed to get them apart. Then I got Jim into a taxi. His face was all cut and bleeding, but I didn't care. I was so mad and hurt and ashamed. I didn't even want to talk to him. And then he started to cry. I'd never seen a man cry before. I couldn't stand it. Oh, Jim, why did you do it? Why?
I don't know.
It's just that crazy jealousy for no reason.
I know, and I'm sorry. You believe I'm sorry, don't you?
Yes. I believe you.
It's because I love you so much. I'm always afraid I'll lose you. Dinah, if you'd marry me, if you were my wife, would you marry me?
We can't, Jim. We haven't got any money.
Well, I'll get some. I'll get a job tomorrow. I'll do anything. Please, say you will. Go on, say it.
All right, Jim. I will. I looked down at my pretty white organdy dress, and it was splattered with crimson.
Rita Lynn will be back in a moment. For incredibly fast relief from the pains of headaches, neuritis, or neuralgia, try Anacin tablets. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, it contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients that give effective relief. If your doctor hasn't already introduced you to Anacin, try it yourself. On sale at any drugstore. For most effective relief, use only as directed. The name? Anacin. A-N-A-C-I-N. Now the second act of Promise of Murder, starring Rita Lynn, who was introduced by Margaret O'Brien. Sitting alone in her apartment, her hand still gripping the telephone, Dinah's thoughts go back through the years, searching for the mistake. trying to discover why her husband Jim would call her as he just did and say,
"That's the answer. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to kill you."
How can I stop him? I thought that when I married him, he'd realize I didn't want anyone else but him. At first, I think he did. Oh, we were the happiest kids in town. We lost track of most of our friends. Jim just didn't care much about parties or anything. That was all right with me. Then, one day, I guess we'd been married about 3 years, an old girlfriend of mine stopped by the apartment. I didn't even think to mention it to Jim, but that night while we were eating dinner... "You're not eating anything, Jim. Isn't it good?"
I'm just not hungry.
Do you feel all right?
Yeah, I feel fine.
Well, did something happen?
You tell me.
What do you mean?
I mean, who was up here today? Who came to see you?
Who? Oh, how did you know that?
Never mind how I know. I know. Who was it?
An old friend of mine, Janie Webster. I knew her in school. Well, so did you.
Oh.
I don't see any reason to get so mad.
But I'm not mad. I just don't see why you didn't tell me about it.
Well, my gosh, you just got in the house 10 minutes ago. I'd have told you.
I'm sorry I blew up.
Well, I'll forgive you if you'll tell me how you knew she was here.
It was a lucky strike in one of the ashtrays. You smoked Pall Mall's.
Oh, you're quite a detective. I hope you noticed a trace of lipstick, so you're sure it wasn't a girlfriend and not a boyfriend.
Shut up, Dinah, shut up.
Jim, I was only joking.
You got a lousy sense of humor.
For the next week, he told me he was sorry. How many times he said it. I can hear him saying it now.
I'm sorry, Dinah. You believe I am, don't you? It's only because I love you so much and I don't deserve you. I know I'm a bad husband, but I'll be better. I'll make you happy. Look, let's throw a party. Sure, that's what we need to do. See some people and have some laughs.
We saw the people, but we didn't have the laughs. Only the tears and the arguments and the remorse. And then he'd be saying it again.
I'm sorry, Dinah.
I know, Jim. It's all right.
You can't blame me for being a little sore the way you act.
I said it's all right.
I don't know why you think it's necessary to greet everybody that comes in here like a long-lost brother. Anybody think I kept you locked up in a dark room all the time? You act like such a darn fool. How do you think it makes me feel?
Please. Can't we forget it?
I wish we could.
We forgot it. Or at least we pretended to. And the people didn't come around anymore. Finally, I decided I'd get a job. Sitting in the apartment alone all day wasn't doing me any good. And besides, we could use the extra money. I remember the night I told him about the job. He came home earlier than usual. At first, I thought something terrible had happened.
Dinah! Dinah!
What's the matter? What's happened?
Oh, you're home.
Well, of course I'm home.
Where have you been? Where have you been all day? I've called here a dozen times, been out of my mind.
Jim, calm down, will you?
I'm out trying to earn a living. You go tearing off someplace.
I'm sorry. I should have told you.
Well, where have you been?
I've been working. I got a job.
You got a job?
Uh-huh. Cashier down at Sweet's Drugstore. I don't get much money, but, oh, it's fun and gives me something to do.
My salary isn't good enough, huh?
Oh, honey, it isn't that. I have everything I could possibly want, except something to do while you're away. I get lonely. And... oh, look, I didn't know you'd feel this way. I won't keep the job.
It's all right. Go ahead, keep it. You don't look right, Dinah. You look half sick all the time.
I know, and I'm sorry.
Well, don't be sorry. Do something about it. It's a crazy job, standing on your feet all day.
Oh, no, it isn't that. I love my job. It's the only thing that...
the only thing that matters to you?
No, Jim, I didn't mean that.
And what did you mean?
Well, I don't know. I really don't. I'm sorry I said it. All of a sudden, I realized that I was the one who was saying I'm sorry all the time. Then, the next day at work, the thing happened that started the whole horrible mess. I saw a man get up from the lunch counter. He looked familiar, and as he walked over to pay his check, I realized that it was Frank Harris.
Dinah! What is it, the darndest thing? I don't believe it's you.
But it is, and oh, gee, it's good to see you, Frank. It's been a long time.
Oh, yeah, I'll say.
You knew Jim and I got married.
Yeah, I know. How is he?
Oh, fine. In the insurance business.
Oh?
Doing very well. I just work here because I like to be busy. Are you married, Frank?
No. Well, the girl I wanted to marry got married to somebody else.
Oh.
Look, I've got an office in the Smith building down the street. It says Frank Harris, M.D. on the door.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Wish you'd pay me a call. I'll give you some little pink pills. Free of charge. No kidding, you look a little pale.
That night, after dinner, Jim kept looking at me kind of funny, and finally he said...
You got something on your mind, Dinah. You keep smiling to yourself. What is it?
Nothing much, really. An old friend of ours came in the store today. Frank Harris.
So that's why that job matters so much. You've been meeting Frank Harris there.
Jim, you don't know what you're talking about.
Haven't you?
Let go of me, please.
Dirty, lying little cheat.
Oh, Jim, don't! Jim. Don't! I guess he must have hit me pretty hard. I remember falling on the floor, and just before I blacked out, I remember I looked at my dress, and it was all splattered with red.
Minutes go by, and still Dinah sits by the phone, trying to understand. Going back through her life with Jim, trying to think of what she did to make him call her and say,
"That's the answer. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to kill you."
I guess he'll walk through that door any minute. And I keep remembering that day a long time ago when we were kids.
You walked home from school with Frankie Harris yesterday. I saw you.
Well, gee whiz, Jim. What if I did?
You're my girl, Dinah, and if I catch you with Frankie or any other guy, I'll kill you.
This morning, I went down to the store and quit my job. I was just starting out the door when Frank came in.
Dinah! Dinah, wait a minute. Hello.
Hello, Frank.
Where are you going? I thought you worked here.
Oh, not anymore. I just quit.
Oh, well, I wondered why... What happened to your face?
Oh, nothing. I fell. It isn't anything much.
You better come down to the office. Let me take a look at
it. Oh, no, thanks. I've got to get home.
It'll only take a minute.
No, I...
Come on. Take a breath now. This might sting.
Oh.
He hit you pretty hard, didn't he?
Oh, no, he... I told you, I fell.
I think Jim did it.
No, what if he did? It's none of your business.
No, I guess you're right.
I knew how he was when I married him.
You thought you could change him, didn't you? Look, Dinah, don't be angry with me. I can't help being concerned about you. I always have been. Now I'm just plain worried. He's getting worse.
I know. I guess I'm the only person in the world who understands him.
Well, skip my personal interest and consider this professional advice. You need some rest. You need to get away by yourself. Think things out.
I'll talk to Jim about it. I'll talk to him tonight. I did talk to Jim just a few hours ago. I thought he'd rage and argue, but he didn't. He was so calm and agreeable.
Sure. I understand, honey. I think you're absolutely right.
It doesn't mean we're breaking up. Just taking a little vacation from each other for a little while.
Yeah, just a little while. I wish I could afford to send you away someplace nice, but as it is, I'll just take a room near the office. You can stay here.
Oh, Jim.
Well, now, don't cry, please. Everything's going to be all right.
Then he left, and I really did think everything was going to be all right. Until he called just a few minutes ago. Now he's coming back. Coming back to...
Don't look so scared, Dinah. It's only your husband.
Jim, Put that gun down. You don't know what you're doing.
Doing what I said I'd do. You lie and you cheat.
Oh, no. Listen to me.
Jim. Don't do it, Jim.
Well, Dr. Harris. Should have known you'd be around somewhere.
Come on. Give me that gun, Jim.
I'll be glad to, just as soon as I...
Dinah, get out of the way. No, he hasn't, Dinah. I'm all right. Just take that gun out of his hand.
I didn't mean to do it. You know I didn't, Dinah. It's only because I love you so much. But he got in the way. He shouldn't have gotten away.
Frank,
I didn't want to hurt you, Dinah.
I'm all right, I tell you. Just my shoulder.
You, Dinah, I love you too much.
Call the police, Dinah.
He hasn't gotten in the way, but
I can't.
You've got to.
I'm sorry.
You've got to for his sake.
I
go on.
I didn't mean to do it. Dinah, I didn't mean it. It's only because I love you so much.
Operator,
get
me the police. The police came and they took Jim away. And then I rode to the hospital in the ambulance with Frank. They took the bullet out of his shoulder, and when it was over, I went in to see him.
Come in, Dinah, come in. Sit down.
You saved my life, Frank. What'll they do with him?
Try to make him well. He's a sick man. He always has been.
Didn't mean to do it.
Sure, I know. He didn't mean to beat you up, either. But he did. When I saw what he'd done to your face, I knew how bad off he was. I was pretty worried. I went over to your place and got there just as Jim left. He didn't see me, but I saw him. And the look on his face was awful. I followed him to a bar and then to a pawn shop. After he left the pawn shop, I went in and they told me he'd bought a gun. I got to you as fast as I could.
He'll make it up to you someday. We both will.
Tiny, you're not going to take him back.
I couldn't answer, Frank. It seemed like such a crazy question. Oh, of course I'll take you back, Jim. As soon as they'll let me. Whatever you've done, I love you and I'm your girl. I always have been. I always will be.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here again is Margaret O'Brien.
And after such a wonderful performance, I know you'll all want to meet Rita Lynn.
Thank you very much.
This is the part of the program where I'm supposed to ask you questions and find out all about you, Miss Lynn.
Okay, Margaret. You ask the questions and I'll try to supply the answers.
This is sort of hard. You see, if I knew all about you, I'd know what questions to ask.
Well, I was born in New Orleans.
That's a good question. Where were you born?
New Orleans.
Oh, that wasn't such a good question after all.
Well, you might ask me how I got into show business.
Oh, that's a dandy question. How did you, Miss Lynn?
Well, Margaret, I've been around the theater practically all my life. My father was a theater manager, and my mother was a star with the famous Velascos in New York.
So you started being an actress when you were just a little girl?
That's right. I played in summer star companies in the East.
Then you came to Hollywood.
No, then I went to New York.
Then you came to Hollywood.
No, I stayed in New York, where I appeared on the stage with Judith Anderson. Later, I was leading lady in a play on Broadway with Richard Conte.
And after that, you came to Hollywood.
No, Margaret. I appeared on the stage in Chicago.
Miss Lynn?
Yes, Margaret?
Did you ever get to Hollywood?
Yes, finally.
But you know something, Miss Lynn? I think this interview goes much better when you sort of give me a hint about the question.
Okay, Margaret. Well, you might ask me what I've been doing since I came to Hollywood.
What have you done?
I've been in several stage plays, done a lot of radio work on most of the big programs, been in a few movies. Latest one being MGM's East Side, West Side. And I'm married and have two little children.
Gee, you've done just about everything, Miss Lynn. And I hope that the next thing you do is to become a movie star.
Well, I hope so too, Margaret. And I want to thank you for introducing me tonight. It was very sweet of you.
It was very sweet of you, Miss Lynn, to help me with the questions. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of The Red Danube, starring Walter Pidgeon, Ethel Barrymore, and Peter Lawford, and the Technicolor musical That Midnight Kiss, starring Katherine Grayson, Jose Turby, and Ethel Barrymore. Tonight's script was written by Martha Wilkerson. In our cast were Ira Grossell, David Ellis, Norma Jean Nilsson, and Alan Reed, Jr. Music was composed and conducted by Bernard Katz. Remember, Anison Hollywood Star Theater is the only radio program which gives motion picture newcomers the opportunity to display their talents in a starring role. And it is the only show in which your favorite top stars of the day select and introduce their choice for the stars of tomorrow. Be with us next week at this same time when Cary Grant will introduce Laura Elliott. In the following weeks, such stars as Claudette Colbert, Rosalind Russell, and Dick Powell will be with us to introduce new stars of tomorrow. This is Ken Peters speaking. Good night.
The Anison Hollywood Star Theater, pontooned to yesterday, an NBC broadcast from September 10th, 1949. And that brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Lepionier. Thanks for tuning in.